Hi, and welcome to the Kubernetes podcast from Google. I'm Adam Glick.
And I'm Craig Box. Happy birthday, my friend.
Thank you very much.
How did you celebrate the event?
Well, it was a wonderful day here. My wife was very nice and made my favorite breakfast for me. I got a chance to play with our little one and just be a little bit lazy around the house, sleep in, and enjoy the time that you don't often find.
What is your favorite breakfast?
So I was going for some hash browns and some pancakes. Mm-hmm. And it turns out I tried to make the hash browns and that didn't work out so well. Turns out making hash browns is actually hard. If you just take and shred a bunch of potatoes and then put it into a fry pan and fry it up, what you end up with is this kind of dark brown, kind of starchy mass, which doesn't taste that bad, in fairness, but was not the hash browns I'd aimed for. So next time I'm going to have to look up a recipe on that one. The pancakes that my wife did were far better.
What's the glue ingredient in the hash brown? Need some egg or something to hold it all together.
Well, normally, you want them to be separate and fluffy. So you actually want to rinse the starch off of them so that they don't glom together. So you want to rinse them and then you want to dry them. I, of course, looked all this up after I had my hash brown accident rather than beforehand, which would have been much more useful. But next time, they'll be better.
I did try to make some corn fritters recently and I underestimated the amount of flour in them. So they ended up kind of gloopy, but tolerable. It's the best I'd describe it. They were tolerable.
Okay, then. Welcome to the podcast CI/CD Loop. Of course, since we're both humans and living in meat space, we have a certain level of non-automatable activities. This is where we'd love your help. Craig and I are always looking for how we can make this podcast more valuable to all of you who are listening. For those of you who met us, you know we often ask what we can do to make the podcast better.
In that spirit, we're introducing the first Kubernetes podcast from Google audience survey. It's a short set of questions to help us get to know you, your listening habits, and your feedback on the show so that we can continuously improve. We think it will take less than 3 minutes to fill it out, and your answers will help us make sure the show remains the best podcast for the cloud native community.
Please go to kubernetespodcast.com/survey or click the link in the show notes and tell us what you think. It really does have an impact on what we do.
Let's get to the news.
Congratulations to the Rook team as the latest project to graduate from the CNCF. Rook is an orchestration system that connects multiple storage options like Ceph, NFS, CockroachDB, and more to Kubernetes. This brings the count of graduated projects to 13, with Rook being the first graduate that focuses on storage. Rook came to the CNCF in 2018 from Upbound, and you can learn all about it in episode 36 with Upbound's Jared Watts.
Just in time for EnvoyCon this week, project founder Matt Klein has announced that WebAssembly, or WASM, support has landed upstream. WASM extensibility had been developed in a long-running fork by the Istio team at Google Cloud, and this is an important step in making it available by default to all Envoy users. This comes just after the release of Envoy 1.16, and documentation is expected to land in time for the release of Envoy 1.17, due in a few months.
Helm charts are on the move, at least if they're stored in Helm Hub. Helm has announced that they are moving their chart repo into the CNCF's Artifact Hub, a more general open-source storage project. Artifact Hub itself is a sandbox-level CNCF project and shows another example of how our community is growing and building a broader ecosystem using its own open-source tools. Any charts you had or used in Helm Hub should be available in Artifact Hub, and the old repository now redirects to the new one.
DigitalOcean has introduced a DigitalOcean App Platform, a new platform as a service. DOAP, which they are hoping you call DOAP, is built on their Kubernetes service and uses gVisor, Cilium, BuildPax, Kaneko, Istio, Envoy, Prometheus, and FluentBit, to name but a few projects in the stack. The service will deploy from code with Bring Your Own Container on the roadmap. It is now live in 3 regions.
IBM has announced that they are splitting their managed infrastructure business out into a new separate company. What remains of IBM will focus on high-growth hybrid cloud and AI, while their managed infrastructure business, or what some might have called their IT outsourcing business, if we use terms from 2 decades ago, will spin out into a yet unnamed separate company. The Kubernetes and Istio work and Red Hat technologies that our community is familiar with will stay a part of the new IBM.
The Kubernetes Steering Committee election has concluded for another year. Congratulations to Devanam Srinivas from VMware for his re-election, and to the 2 new members of the committee, Bob Killen of Google, latterly of the University of Michigan, and Jordan Liggett, also of Google, latterly of episode 34.
If you have the steering bug, the OpenTelemetry project has just announced an upcoming election. Four community members will be elected to their governance committee, which is gradually replacing the bootstrap committee put in place when the project was founded.
Levan Nia of CyberAgent has announced the open source release of PipeCD, a declarative continuous delivery tool for Kubernetes, serverless, and VMs. The goal of the project is to create one CD tool for all the different ways applications could be deployed. The initial release focuses on visibility, automation, security, and multi-tenancy / multi-provider.
Anchor, with an E on the end, has announced the aptly named Anchor Toolbox, a collection of open-source DevSecOps tools. The toolbox is just starting to get its collection together and starts with two tools. The first is Sift, with a Y, which scans containers and source code directories. The second tool is Gripe, also with a Y. Gripe scans projects and containers for known vulnerabilities. Together, the tools are designed to enable the growing shift-left trend in security.
Rancher Labs has announced the release of Rancher 2.5. The latest release provides the ability to install Rancher's agent on any cluster, allowing use of their control plane with multiple Kubernetes distributions. If you're using EKS, Rancher is looking for you, as they now provide lifecycle management on that platform. Additionally, RKE Government was announced, which is a version of Rancher for governmental agencies, using SE Linux as well as providing FIPS 140.2 certified encryption. Finally, bundles were announced as a new way to deploy and manage applications.
Red Hat has announced a price drop for their dedicated OpenShift offering on AWS, Google Cloud, Azure, and IBM Cloud. The package can now be purchased as a 3-year commitment with a cluster fee of $263 per year and worker nodes starting at $667 each. Red Hat also announced an increase in their SLA to 3.5 nines or 4 nines if you're using IBM Cloud.
Kubernetes continues to fly high in the defense industry with an announcement from the US Air Force this week that Kubernetes flew on a U-2 reconnaissance plane. Neither Bono nor the Edge were spotted or harmed.
Finally, Eric Jotty this week released a UI for Kubernetes that is best described as how old McDonald would tell his kids about cloud native. He's created a management experience for Kubernetes in Minecraft, where pigs are pods, cows are replica sets, chickens are services, and so on. What it may lack in efficiency, it more than makes up for in creativity and 8-bit fun.
And that's the news. Romero Berrieza is the CEO and co-founder of Octeto, with a K, who build tools to improve the developer experience for cloud-native developers. Before this, he was an architect at Atlassian and an engineer at Elasticbox, no relation, and Microsoft Azure. He's originally from Mexico and currently lives in San Francisco. Welcome to the show, Romero.
Hi, Adam. Hi, Greg. Thanks for having me. Very excited to be here.
What got you interested in technology?
I got into technology since I was very little. Video games was kind of like the gateway to me. I remember I got a Nintendo back home, and then there was this game, Excitebike.
Oh, yeah.
That really got me. You could build your own roads. Mm-hmm. That's when I got this sense of, you can actually create things with tech. Then after that, video games got to computers. That got to learning how to code. Taking one C++ class in my senior year of high school. And then when it came to pick my degree at college, I just went with computer science, and I have not been able to get away from tech since then.
Have you at least been able to get away from C++?
Yes, I am a happy Go developer these days. Or, well, used to be. Now I'm more of an email developer, but you know.
Indeed. You started out at big companies. You worked at Hitachi, IBM, Microsoft, and then you moved into the startup world where you've been ever since. What inspired the shift from big company to the agile startup world?
For me, it was two things. One, it was being at the right time and at the right place. Two of my good friends at Microsoft, Alberto and Amadeo, started Elasticbox. They moved to the Bay Area, and then they started reaching out to me and said, hey, come join us. It's a lot of fun. You should try the startup life. And it was something that I've always knew of. There's a lot of mystique around San Francisco, Silicon Valley, startups. Back in Mexico, the tech industry there, startups were not a thing. After my fourth year at Microsoft, why not? Let's try this. I'll do it for a couple of years, see if I like it. And then once I moved here, started working in startups, now I'm like, I'm not going to go back to a big company. It's just such a different world. Like, Elasticbox was such a wild, fun ride that made me really want to stick around for more of this.
Tell us about that wild, fun ride, because as employee number 5 at Elasticbox, you may have done quite well out of the fact that the company was acquired 2 years after you joined. What did that make you think about future startup participation?
That was a lot of fun. I was one of the first engineers there when we joined. It was the founders who had an idea, a vision. And then my now co-founder, Pablo, and I were pretty much the first two engineers. So it was a lot of work. a lot of highs, a lot of lows, but it really showed me what a small focus team can really accomplish. I came from big companies where roles were very dedicated. It was like, oh, you are the engineer for this small piece of the whole world. Mm-hmm. Then you move to a startup and you're like, yeah, it is. No, it is. And it was for me, it was a huge adjustment. I went from Seattle having a PC, writing code in .NET, having a Windows phone, moving to San Francisco, and it was like, what's this Mac thing? Okay, where's the Windows key? Oh, right.
Yeah, they check you at the border for California. They're like, well, Windows phone. I don't know you're allowed that.
I was able to sneak that one in. So many people made fun of me in San Francisco for having a Windows phone, but I still miss my Nokia Lumia, I gotta say. It was just this big change where you now own all these things, you have a lot more impact, and you can really help deliver this vision in a much more hands-on way that I really like about startups. And that was what Elasticbox really showed me you can do. And that you can have a lot of fun while doing it with your friends.
You get to wear a lot of hats at a startup as opposed to in a large organization. Most recently, you've moved on and founded Octeto. What inspired you to create your own company?
That's an extension of what happened in Elasticbox. Octeto is a company that I started with my closest friends, Pablo and Ramon. The three of us came from Elasticbox, as in typical Silicon Valley fashion. You kind of start building your group, your friends, and you kind of bring them along. I was working at big companies at the time. I was at Atlassian, my two friends were at Docker and at Google. And we just kept talking about all these cool things we wanted to do and all these cool projects we were trying to push through in our companies. And one day, Ramon and I were having dinner at somewhere in the Mission, and he was like, you know what? Why don't we just do our own company? It'll be so much fun. Pablo was living in Spain. She was like, we can just move to Spain, spend the summer there, start on this company, and then if things go well, we'll have a job. If not, we'll just find something else. Number one, working with my friends, and number two, having all these ideas we wanted to.
Spending a summer in Spain.
Yes, that's the real reason why we have this company. Everything else is just, okay, we do have to do something for a living, but I need an excuse to go spend a few months there, which I'm not going to say wasn't nice.
We do like to ask people whether the problem or the company came first. And it does sound like that you got a few people together and said, we like working together. We want to build something. How did you go about identifying which problem to attack?
By elimination and trying 1,000 different things. It's a funny story because when we got together, the first thing that I said was, I'm done with DevTools. I don't want to do this anymore. Let's do something new. And they were like, okay, cool. Yeah. We started experimenting with everything from voice-based apps, IoT devices. At some point, we were about to join a VR launchpad accelerator just to kind of do something. And then one day, one of the mentors there told us, you don't know anything about this space and you clearly know a lot about DevTools. Just go do that. And especially because as we were building all these other prototypes, we kept building this tooling to help us build these prototypes. And it's actually where our open source project came from. At some point, we were like, okay, let's accept this. What we like to do is DevTools. Let's just go at it. By then, we had some experience with Kubernetes, and we have seen all these pain points that our friends complain about that we suffer personally. And then we saw a good chance to, hey, we can contribute a lot by taking our expertise on DevTools, on cloud services, and really put it to the task of making it easier for everybody else to take advantage of this wonderful set of technology that is cloud native and Kubernetes.
Didn't DevTools pretty much just max itself out when someone created Emacs, and everything since then has mostly just been plugins and other tools?
That's a very Vegemite opinion of you,
yeah,
my friend.
Yeah, especially because I'm a BIM kind of guy, but yeah.
Fair enough, not to open up that debate, but tell us a little bit about what Octeto does.
Right. At a very high level, Octeto, we're building tools to make it easier for developers to use Kubernetes as a developer tool. A lot of what we do is hiding Kubernetes. Most developers should see Kubernetes as this compute infrastructure, what gets your apps running, but then they should be focusing on their own applications. And that's something that early tools in the cloud native space have been more focused on making it easier to access Kubernetes. And for us, it's about the next step. It's now that you know how to run a cluster, now that you have your apps running there, how you make your team a lot more efficient, how you make your developers happier by giving them all these tools. Basically, they don't have to edit YAML every day.
But people love YAML. Why would you take it away from them?
I'm not a big fan. I have strong opinions. I don't like the spaces in my code. I don't like Python for the same reason.
It's one of those things that is always going to be changing. Whatever the data format is, XML, it's JSON, it's YAML. There's always a new language and there's always a new file format.
We love reinventing those things. It does get better over time. I think we can all agree that YAML is much, much better than writing XML.
Had you been working pure engineering roles up until this point?
Yeah, this is my first non-engineering role. At Atlassian, I was an architect, but before that, I was a principal engineer. So I was writing code all the time. Microsoft was the same thing. Elasticbox was pure coding. So yeah, this is my first adventure as a non-developer. I still code some of the time, but it's no longer my main role.
So when the three of you sit down in your San Francisco restaurant to discuss the company, how do you decide who's going to be the CEO?
I think I just missed that meeting. Then they decided that, oh, you're not there. You're
going to
have
to
deal with all of this. Yeah, Ramon and Pablo live in Madrid now. So I think they had a secret meeting without me. Now, it was mostly a function of that, of who was better suited for different roles. And Pablo's a great CTO, and Ramon has this great vision of products. So he's driving a kind of like our product efforts. And I felt like me, by being in San Francisco, especially as we were thinking about having to do fundraising, engaging with more customers, it just made sense.
What's your main job? You mentioned fundraising, and I guess in a startup, that's certainly a core part of what you need to do. What does that look like?
That's an interesting question. I don't think I know at this point. I'm trying to still figure out what a CEO is supposed to do. A lot of what I do day to day is being the external facing part of the company. I talk a lot with our users, write content to make people understand better what we do, talk to investors, of course, talk to other companies for partnerships. So a lot of what I do is more, how can we drive our vision on the outside while the rest of the company, my co-founders, our engineering team, builds internally and all the features and kind of release a product. That's not how it's split right now. But one thing I like about early stage startups is that it changes so much week by week.
Do you ever miss doing the tech work? Do you ever think, hey, I want to get out of email and more into Emacs or whatever your coder coding environment of choice is?
Have you learned nothing?
Definitely.
You can go Nano, you can go Vim, you can even go VS Code, like, yeah, whatever you like.
That is true. These days I'm a VS Code fan. Yeah, I do miss it. Every now and then I do write some features. I do like writing code. Developers that write code on their free time, I really enjoy coding, and I have all these hobby apps that I build in my spare time. One thing that our mentors have been teaching us is how being focused on what the company needs can really help you advance your vision. And sometimes that's not coding. And it's been that we as a company need to learn, need to build. I'm also enjoying new facets of my careers. It keeps me basic, gets me excited.
Speaking of mentors, Octeto was part of the Winter 19 batch and the Y Combinator Accelerator. How did that come about?
It's a cool story. A few years ago, Pablo interviewed for Bitnami. He didn't get the job, but he became friends with the founder of Bitnami, Daniel. He's also from Spain. When we were playing around with the idea of Octeto, building prototypes, at some point we talked to him and his first thing was like, yeah, you should join YC. I think you're a good fit. It's going to help you a lot in what you're doing. I think he saw him in us a little bit. He's kind of our first mentor in Octeto, and he was really the reason why we applied. We didn't have a company back then. We had this open source project. We had some ideas of what we wanted to build. And then we just, you know, spent a few weeks doing the infamous 1 minute video, which takes hours to make, of course, filling all those questions, which was a really cool process. And then we applied and we were lucky enough to get admitted.
Did that mean that Ramon and Pablo had to move back from Madrid?
Yeah, the three of us moved here for the duration of the batch, which was 3 months. We ended up renting a house in the mission. Of course, I can't seem to skip mission. So we rented this very nice house in Folsom and 24th, which is right where Phil's Coffee is, for those of you who know SF. And this is very mythical base, kind of this cool hacker house for us. It's a pretty cool experience. And then we were going to YC, working on the company, working on the product, doing all these different things. And it was a great experience. I'd really recommend that to everyone. I really enjoyed it.
How did your significant others feel about that move?
Well, the partner lives here in San Francisco, so for her it was not a big deal. But yeah, especially Pablo. Pablo had a small kid at that time. Well, he still has it. It was smaller back then. They made a sacrifice, and I really appreciate how they both made the sacrifices. They were flying back and forth all the time, but also their partners. And I'm always thankful that they allow them the space, and they also made the sacrifice to let us pursue these dreams. It was a big happy family where everybody was helping each other.
At the end of these accelerators, you go through a demo day process. What was that like?
Ooh, demo day was brutal. It's one of those things that I've seen videos before. I've heard people talk about it, but I've never could have imagined what it was like. It was very intense. You have this 1 minute pitch where at that moment you feel like your entire future depends on that pitch. Now I know that it's not true, but back then is how it feels. They're rushing you through like a go, and they have to talk to hundreds of investors who everyone wants to get your entire company in 30 seconds. So it's very intense. It's fun. Those 3 months, they prepare you for this day. And it is significant because that's when you raise capital that allows you to go faster, hire more, build more features, all those things. A cool experience, but it was something that I'm glad that I don't have to go through again.
It is an experience that not too many people get to go through and a lot of people want to be able to go through. What's the most valuable thing that you learned that you could share with the people who are listening?
For us and for me personally, the most valuable thing, and this comes back to me being an engineer for most of my career, is there's a big difference between building a product and building a company. And the three of us were really good and really experienced at building products. We've done that for a long time. But building companies is a whole different thing. YC is really good at helping you make that transition and learn what it takes. It's not just about your features. It's about the story you're telling. It's about your vision. It's about how you're going to change the world. Some of my batchmates were, oh, we're building an electric plane. We're going to solve global warming. For us, it was more, do you want to help developers be more efficient at their job? We all have our dreams or visions, but YC is really good at teaching you, hey, it's your dream and make sure you sell it and make sure that whatever you do in your company is advancing that goal. It sounds obvious maybe in retrospect, but when you're deep in the weeds, writing code, building features, it's not as obvious.
Let's talk about the project itself. People often talk about Kubernetes and about whether it's a developer or more of an operator tool. You have a lot of experience with developer tools. What do you think about the current state of developer tools for Kubernetes?
Right now, it's a very exciting state because we are in the beginning of Kubernetes. I know that for a lot of us, it seems like a long time. I was lucky enough to be at DockerCon the day that Craig McLucky showed Kubernetes to the world. I remember that day and I was like, yeah, this is really cool. But that's for the ones who are super deep into it. For most people, it's just the beginning. It's very exciting that you're starting to see how all these tools are being built in place. I think the first few years of Kubernetes was all about making it easy to operate, easy to deploy, easy to run things. And now we're in a time where there's a lot of people, a lot of companies like ours, trying to solve the next problem, which is now that you have a cluster running, now that you know how to scale your application and keep it running in production, how do you make it easier for developers to use it and to build apps? Because if you look at how we're writing apps, even before this, when containers came to be or the whole DevOps revolution, that changed how we deploy, but that didn't change how we write code. We're still using VS Code or Emacs locally on a single machine. Everything is running there while we're building these apps that are supposed to be scaled up to the infinities. I think the new generation of tools are going to take care of this and really make developers expand into Kubernetes and really use it as a dev platform in a way that's easy, in a way that's accessible. Because right now, Kubernetes is still very much for experts. And I think that's something that's going to change over time. We saw the same thing with cloud computing, you know, when Heroku came out, when the early HashiCorp tools came out. I think we saw the same transition, and I think it's going to happen. And hopefully we can be a small part of that.
Do you think that the development experience is broken in Kubernetes?
It's a strong word. I like to use it because it's an expression broken that I think provokes thought and discussion. I think that today, if you want to build an app for Kubernetes, you have to keep a lot of things on your head. You have to understand everything from your app to the container model, to YAML, to network policies. It's too much to ask a single developer. And I think that's where this next generation of tools are going to be helping developers not having to worry about this. For me, Kubernetes, in the same way that cloud, they should be invisible. You should be able to write a Java app, a Go app, whatever it is, without even seeing Kubernetes. For you, is that's where my app runs and I get all these benefits, but I don't have to deal with it. I think what Netlify did for the Jamstack or Vercel is what we need to do for the rest of Kubernetes, where you just run and you focus as a developer on your applications, on your business domain, on making your customers happy. And then Kubernetes just takes care of itself or through tools like what we're building.
It sounds like there's a lot of view on how do you abstract it away and keep developers focused on writing the things that they want to write, which really makes Kubernetes more of an operator tool and something that operations is really worried about running. In that aspect, why is it so important for the community to continue to invest in developer experiences?
I think it's important because developers, like we're moving towards more complex applications and developers should be focusing on that aspect, on the application. If you don't have a good dev experience, then you have all these abstractions leaking and it's more things you have to think about. It's more things you have to take care about. One of our early demos of Octeto was this idea that today, if you want to ship an application, you have to write the code, build the container, deploy the application, wait for it to be online, all these things just to validate that your code works. And it's a lot of things to have to think about, have to go through, especially because as you refine your code, you might have to go through this 15, 20 times per day. Refining that experience so developers don't have to carry all this cognitive load on their head and instead can focus on their application, I think is very important. And I think that's where the community needs to get involved because there's not going to be a single experience. We all build apps in a different way. We all think of development in different ways. So I think that's this diversity of thought, of experiences is very important. And I think that right now, the Kubernetes community is still very Kubernetes driven, which makes sense. So that's where it's important to start to involve, you know, people with different backgrounds who don't care so much about the infrastructure and operations and care more about development.
How is Octeto different from other development tools, Scaffold, Draft, for example, that are commonly used?
Our biggest difference with what I was saying before is that for us, it's all about the application. One of the first things that we want to do with Octeto and we do with the open source project is decouple the deployment of the application from the development. The first thing that you gain when you're using our open source project, Octeto, is that you can target any running application of Kubernetes and just swap the application for your dev container. You don't have to worry about how to deploy your application. That can be done automatically. That can be done through Helm, kubectl, whatnot. And then at that point, you have a dev container and you're just working on that. You can iterate your code, you can run your processes, all without really seeing Kubernetes. We synchronize our code both ways as a way to keep things more efficient for you. And I think that is the biggest difference, is that for us, is Scaffold and Draft are really good at automating all the tasks that you have to do when you're building a Kubernetes app, which is great. For us, it's more about, can we not even do those tasks? Can we give you pretty much a terminal into your Kubernetes application, where you can just run your process and restart and hot reload it? You don't have to think of anything else. And that's what the open source project is doing. Right now, it's resonating with a lot of people, and we've been getting some really good feedback and want to keep doing more things with that.
I've seen that the tool allows you to work with both remote clusters and local clusters, but you're a strong advocate for using a remote cluster instead of running everything on the laptop. Why is that?
Because running a local cluster, it ties you up to Kubernetes. We want to enable developers to not have to learn Kubernetes to be able to contribute to my applications. It's key. And there are things like Minikube, K3S, Docker for Mac who make it easier, but you're still running a cluster locally. And then when you think of a company, you may have like 100 engineers, then you have 100 clusters running on every machine. It's one more thing you have to think about that you have to maintain. For us, that's why I do believe that you have the cloud, it's very easy to run a cluster there or to get it running. Keeping it running is a whole different beast. Moving there, it makes it easier, and it's one less thing you have to run locally, and it's one less thing that can go wrong in your local machine.
How do you think about balancing the open source aspects of Octeto with the need to run your business?
That is the multi-billion dollar question at this point. It's tricky. Mm-hmm. There's two things here, right? For us, it's open source is very important. We build everything on top of open source. We want to give back. And I think that the dev experience, the design of the dev experience needs to happen in the open so more people can show what they think about, they can contribute. For us, it was very important from the very beginning to do a lot of these things in the open, especially everything the developers use, the CLI, things they install on their local machine. That part is open source. What we're doing, the way we balance it is we do have to keep the company running. We do have to build products that make sense for companies. What we're doing with our commercial offering is what do a company needs to do to enable this vision of remote clusters. Pretty much everything that is dev experience is open source. Everything that is things like policy management, resource garbage collection, self-service access, credential management. Those are the kind of things that we're offering as part of our commercial solution. Everything else, the dev containers, the connectivity to remote clusters, that's all open source. And we feel like that's a good balance. That's a good way where we can give back to the community. We can be part of a bigger conversation while at the same time making sure we have a healthy business that allows us to do this for a long time.
Octeto has a SaaS part of the product where the people go into the dashboard and they have it, but you also have the ability to run things locally through a CLI. If someone is just running the open source CLI components of it, what are they missing out on besides the obvious enterprise features that you talked about as part of the licensing?
You gain the dev containers, you gain the dev experience, it's very fast in your loop. What you're missing is what we have on the SaaS, which is the UI-based experience. All the experience we're building where you don't see Kubernetes, that is on our SaaS. Being able to point Octeto to one Git repo, and Octeto will just figure out how to deploy that, and whether that's Helm or kubectl or a Docker file, we just get it running for you on Kubernetes. You are missing that part. But you gain everything else. And that's where, for developers who know about Kubernetes, who are building operators or Kubernetes infrastructure, the CLI makes a lot more sense. For the rest of us who are building applications who don't really care that they're running on Kubernetes, but they do care that their apps are available and they scale, our SaaS is a much better fit.
Where did the name Octeto come from? Is it because 8 is 1 more than 7?
I wish that was the reason. That would make a lot more sense. This was not the first name. We were looking for a name, and we knew that Kubernetes, number 8, and the K is very important. Back when we were all in college, especially in Spain, all the computer programming books were translated to Spanish, and they will translate everything all the way to words like byte, software, hardware, which some of them are very funny because they had to reuse all these old terms. So for byte, they use octeto in Spanish, which is really the name for a poem, like an octet when you have a poem with 8 syllables. So it sounds like, oh, octeto. So it swaps the C for a K to make it more Kubernetes friendly. And we discovered that the GitHub handle was available and the .com was available. So we were, yeah, that's what we're using. And like most names, we didn't love it at the beginning. We were like, okay, yeah, we'll do this. And we spent 3 days trying to name this thing. And then now I'm a big fan of the name. I like it. And I like that it has that inside story that we can tell at parties and at least to each other.
I love that. Most people try and aim for poetry in their work, and this is quite literally poetry as your work. You mentioned that Octeto wasn't the original name. What was the original name?
The first name of that open source project was CND because it was cloud native development. And that's the whole concept that we have with this idea of moving people to remote clusters and to this kind of abstracting Kubernetes away. We call that cloud native development. CND was the first name of a CLI. But then people were very confused. It was hard to type. It was hard to remember. That's when we made the transition to Octeto, especially as we were thinking of making a company. We felt we needed something more representative of what we were doing.
Changing names is hard. Are there any places where it still shows the old name, or are there any Easter eggs you put in homage to it?
Yeah, there's this Easter egg that we started using 2 years ago, and I'm really happy that someone found it like 6 months ago. Most of our demos or blog posts, we made up this fake user, and the name is Cindy Lopez, which it's a multi-level joke. Most of it is bad, but it's Cindy because of CND. And it's Lopez because Cindy Lopez sounds kind of like Cindy Lauper, but it's a Latino last name. And, you know, since all of us are Latinos or Spanish.
It's because all you want to do is have fun.
Yeah. It's kind of a wink too.
If she was Mexican.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. And we even got this Creative Commons of Cindy Lauper that we put as the profile pic for this made up users. It's a funny wink to all of these things. And I'm really happy that one person got it a few months ago. So I guess that means it's not a super awful joke. It's just bad, but I'll take that.
That's great. Finally, I know you live in San Francisco and love a good mission burrito, as I saw you tweeting about recently. So I'm going to ask a highly controversial question here, which is, what is the best taqueria in the mission and which burrito do you recommend there?
Oh, this might get me in trouble here in the city. I might be banned from certain establishments, but when it comes to burritos, I'm a purist. So I'm a huge fan of El Farolito, the one that started the whole thing. Specifically, though, I'm a fan of the El Farolito on 24th Street. Whoever comes San Francisco, don't go to the 116, just go to the one on 24th, walk the extra 5-6 blocks. It's worth it. I don't know why, but it's just so much better.
And a recommended burrito? If you're going to make the extra steps, you're going to go all the way to 24th, which one should you be getting?
It depends on how adventurous you feel, but I highly recommend getting a beef tongue burrito, which I know for some people might be squeamy, but it's really, really good. So I highly, highly recommend. If not, the classic carne asada, you can't go wrong.
Cow in all its forms is fantastic and should be enjoyed at any opportunity.
We'll agree to disagree on that one, Craig.
And with that, thank you very much for joining us today, Romero.
Oh, thanks to you, Craig and Adam. This was a lot of fun. I'm really happy that you invited us here.
You can find Romero on Twitter at rberrelleza, rberrelleza, or on the web at octeto.com, with a K. You can find Octeto on Twitter at octetohq.
Thanks for listening. As always, if you've enjoyed this show, please help us spread the word and tell a friend. If you have any feedback for us, you can find us on Twitter at KubernetesPod or reach us by email at KubernetesPodcast@google.com.
Even better, fill in our audience survey, which you can find at KubernetesPodcast.com/survey. You will also find transcripts and show notes on our site, as well as links to subscribe. Until next time, take care.
Catch you next week.